It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some big changes to federal student loans are set to take effect July 1st, raising questions about how that will impact the hundreds of thousands of student loan borrowers in Wisconsin.
The changes come from the federal reconciliation bill passed last summer. Some existing repayment plans will go away or change, and borrowers will have some new options as well.
Wisconsin has more than 700,000 student loan borrowers. As of March, nearly 1 in 5 were enrolled in the SAVE plan, one of the plans that's going to sunset at the end of the month.
What should borrowers in Wisconsin do ahead of these changes? Betsy Mayotte is with us for a look. She's president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, also known as TISLA. She's been working in the student loan industry doing compliance and advocacy work for over 25 years. Betsy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we go into the details, supporters of these changes and President Trump's Department of Education has said, hey, these changes are going to simplify student loan repayments, lower the cost of college. Do you see things getting, once we get through this next month, simpler and more affordable?
I think things are going to be more complicated in the short term, but at least as far as repayment plans go, they will be less complicated in the long term.
For people listening who have student loans, these changes take effect July 1st. What should people be doing right now?
Well, it depends where you're at. If you're in the how am I going to pay for college phase, you really need to educate yourself on the new loan limits because they're much smaller, and make sure that you're calculating how you're going to pay for your full degree, not just worry about this year, and worry about next year. Families really need to project how they're going to pay for the full degree, all 4 or 5 or 6 years. For those borrowers that are currently in repayment, you mentioned all the residents of Wisconsin who are on the SAVE plan. They need to start looking at the repayment plans that are going to be available to them and that will best fit in their not only short-term budget, but long-term student loan management strategy.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Coalition on Student Debt told us in March that around 135,000 Wisconsin borrowers were on that SAVE plan. What is that going to mean for that over 100,000 people? They have the SAVE plan. What are changes going to mean for them?
So borrowers that are on the SAVE plan have been what some of us are calling the SAVE limbo. Some people are calling it the SAVE malaise. But they've sort of been in pause for almost 2 years now. Starting on July 1st, these borrowers are going to start getting notices. And when they get that notice, there'll be a 90-day window where they will have to pick a new plan. And if they don't pick a plan, by the time their particular 90-day window is up, they will automatically be put in what's called a standard or level repayment plan. And that's often a lot more expensive monthly than a plan based on income might be.
What are their options apart from that plan if they don't want that that big jump in their monthly fees?
So it depends. So if they're done borrowing, so as long as they don't borrow a new loan or have a consolidation go through after June 30th, they'll have options such as income-based repayment, which is another plan based on income, income contingent repayment. There's also plans that aren't based on income, such as an interest-only plan called graduated repayment or extended repayment. They'll also be able to use a new plan called the RAP, the Repayment Assistance Plan, that'll be available somewhere around July 1st. But for anybody who consolidates or borrows on or after July 1st, their only choices will be that new RAP plan or a standard plan that's based on the balance of their loan.
Now, the Parent PLUS loans aren't going away, but there are some changes, including some restrictions. You mentioned parents having to evaluate that full length of college now. What changes there and how can families adapt to that?
Oh, boy. That budget bill really smacked around our Parent PLUS borrowers, unfortunately. So on the borrowing side of it, Parent PLUS borrowing used to be unrestricted in the fact that there was no limit on how much you could borrow other than the cost of attendance for the undergraduate's school. Now there's a pretty hard limit. They can't borrow more than $20,000 a year per dependent undergraduate student and no more than $65,000 total for each dependent undergraduate student. So this is, again, why I started out by saying it's important that they plan out the full degree program, not just on an annual basis. On the other side of the coin, it used to be that Parent PLUS borrowers, they had to jump through some hoops, but they had access to these plans based on income. And for any parents that haven't consolidated already, or don't have one in progress, and or who borrow again on or after July 1st, they will have no options for repayment plans. They'll have a standard plan, and that's it.
We're talking about some upcoming changes to federal student loans and how they'll impact some Wisconsin borrowers. Betsy Mayotte is with us, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, also known as TISLA. You looked up some Wisconsin-specific information. I understand, Betsy, looking at people who were delinquent on their loans or behind on their loans. What do you see here in Wisconsin?
So just across the country, I'm sorry to say that we are, in my opinion, a delinquency and default crisis. It was, you know, mentioned in my intro that I have been working in this industry since the earth cooled. And this is honestly one of the biggest jumps and most worrisome periods in student loan history that I've seen in my career. From a national perspective, an additional over 3 million people defaulted on their loans in the last quarter of 2025. And to put that in perspective, prior to COVID, there was a total of around 3 or 4 million borrowers in default. So we almost doubled that number in the last quarter of 2025. From a Wisconsin perspective, you mentioned there's a little over 700,000 Wisconsin borrowers holding federal student loans. Almost 20% of those, or 125,000, are currently in default. And then if you look at, so the Department of Ed has started putting out a new piece of data that they're calling the non-repayment rate. The non-repayment rate is, they're only looking at people who recently left school. So people that have left school since January of 2020. And consider that those people, they weren't required to make payments during COVID. So they've only really been in repayment a couple of years. At the national level, between 20 and 25% of them are at least 90 days past due or are on the, and on their way to default. Wisconsin's doing a little bit better than the rest of the country, but you still have like half your schools that at least 10 or 20 or even a higher percentage of their students are 90, recent grads are 90 days or more past due.
What's driving, Betsy, this crisis? Is it confusion because a lot of loans were a stop and start, don't pay, do pay for a while? Or is it something economic? What do you see driving that big jump in default and being behind on payments?
Oh, Rob, it's a perfect storm. It's all the things that you just said. So, you know, first, you know, we took people that were in the habit of making payments out of that habit for over 3 years during COVID. Now, it was the right thing to do at the time, but that was always going to be the fallback. And then in the meantime, we created a new repayment plan and then went, oh, never mind. It got shut down by the courts. And then we changed a whole bunch of other rules in ways that we've never seen rules change. Congress has never taken some of the steps that they took under H.R. 1 before. And then everything else got more expensive. Gasoline, fruit. I just read a statistic that produce is like gone up like 44% in the last few months. Healthcare costs. All of that has happened all at once. And I think all of those things is what's driving this increased delinquency and default rate. And like you said, borrowers are just confused. Another phenomenon I'm seeing that I haven't seen to this extreme are the emotions that we're getting from the borrowers that reach out to TISLA for help. The word anxiety is a very common word used in the emails that we get. People just don't know what to do. Like if I, my lowest payment will mean I'm not going to be able to pay my rent. And I am seeing this in much higher levels than I ever have before.
And what do you tell that person facing that anxiety, looking at these changes, knowing they're behind? How can they tackle this problem?
Well, you know, for people that owe high debts, I use that old expression. How does one eat an elephant one bite at a time? What I find is helpful to the majority of the borrowers we work with is just being able to educating themselves on what their options are, using the online tools and calculators like what's on our website and the Department of Ed's website, which is studentaid.gov, to understand what your options are, what they're going to cost you in the short term, what they're going to cost you in the long term. Thankfully, with federal student loans, even with all the changes of H.R. 1, we have sort of an embarrassment of riches as far as options go. There's more than a handful of lower payment options. If none of those work, there's temporary postponement of payments altogether through deferments and forbearances. If life really gives you a hard left hook, there's even discharges for things like permanent disability or if the borrower should pass away, etc.
It sounds like the key is to not let that anxiety keep people from tackling this, right? A pep talk to say, hey, don't keep putting off dealing with this until July or later.
100%. And there's just debt in general, there's a lot of anxiety that consumers have. But thankfully, people can go to our website, studentaid.gov, and quietly, without having to talk to anybody, if they don't want to, they can educate themselves. And once you understand what your options are, I find that almost always that anxiety just for the most part melts away.
With all the back and forth of the courts and the legislature on this, is there still an unanswered question, some other shoe you're waiting to drop, Betsy, as we wrap up?
Oh boy. There's been talk of a, HR 1 2.0. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Congress is going to stay away from student loans for a minute. I really do. I think right now what the other shoe just might be seeing how smooth the implementation of all these rules become.
Betsy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That's Betsy Mayotte, president and founder of the Institute of Student Loan Advisors, also known as TISLA. We've been talking about upcoming changes to student loan repayment plans. Well, have we been talking about you and what you're dealing with right now as someone who's holding some student loan debt and trying to figure out what to do about it? As a parent or a student going into college yourself, love to hear what you are experiencing, maybe a solution you found along the way. Email us at wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, Milwaukee's police department hires victim witness specialists to assist families who are at the center of the unthinkable, having to cope with the aftermath of a violent crime.
People do have to find a way to move forward. It's just going to be at their own pace, and we want to make sure that we're there every step of the way.
That's ahead on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So far this year, there have been 43 homicides in Milwaukee, 191 reported rapes, and more than 2,000 aggravated assaults.
Investigations for violent crimes are maybe the most sensitive thing that police departments deal with. Grieving family members who are often witnesses have a lot of questions without easy answers.
Earlier this year, the Milwaukee Police Department hired two victim witness specialists to help crime victims and their loved ones navigate the criminal justice system. Dakota Krenz and Selena Zanuzzi are the first people in these roles. They both held similar jobs with the Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office. Selena and Dakota, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Also with us is Captain James Hutchinson, commander of the Milwaukee Police Department's Homicide Division. Captain, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Selena, let's start with you. You work with people dealing with one of the worst things imaginable. The people you're working with and their families have been victims of violent crime. What are some of the biggest challenges they face in working with police?
I think sometimes not understanding police procedure and feeling like maybe they're not getting as much information as they would like about the investigation up front, that is a challenge. Sometimes people are displaced due to the incident that's happened, and trying to work around that is also a difficulty sometimes.
Is it hard for, in terms of police procedure, does it feel sometimes that it's not moving fast enough for them?
I think sometimes families may not always understand why things have to happen in a certain way. And when things are
fluid and happening quickly, and sometimes emotions are running high, it's really hard to come off of that emotion. People are not always able to readily accept information as it's being explained to them simply because of the trauma that's happening.
Hmm. You are connecting the people you work with services that they need to live and survive. Can you talk about what you're helping them with?
A lot of what we're doing is connecting families with grief support resources, information about next steps that would be happening. For example, the autopsy, how things work at the medical examiner's office, maybe some of the future planning that they may have to consider when laying their loved one to rest. We're then also trying to connect them with grief resources and other needs as appropriate, whether it's housing or food or toiletries. Every case is a little bit different.
Dakota, in this time of grief, how do you initially approach people you work with?
I think it's always a matter of approaching people with dignity and respect as we're coming to them on potentially the worst day of their life, dealing with that trauma and that grief. So really just being as transparent as we can with people, given the limitations that we have during an open and active investigation, and also explaining why to them we can't necessarily provide answers. I think sometimes that helps if it's not just a hard no, but if it's a no because of this. And then also just treating everybody with care and kindness and just recognizing that everyone is doing the best that they can in that moment.
How is transparency? Are you able to give these families answers that they're okay with because something unimaginable has just happened to them?
I think that's on a case-by-case basis as everyone processes grief differently. Mm. I think all or most families obviously want to know what happened and why. And so we do our best to give that answer when we can, when it's appropriate. And in the meantime, we explain why we can't give that answer quite yet. But we do try to remind families that their loved one is never forgotten and that we are always trying to get them justice.
Captain Hutchinson, why did the Milwaukee Police Department create these positions of victim witness specialists?
Well, we realized that we had an opportunity to really improve our communication with our community members, including our victims' families and our victims themselves. Oftentimes, we are very much asking questions, expecting answers during our investigations, but we're not always there to be responsive and to fill those gaps of communication back to the families, kind of explaining the process. And we, for years, have realized that this is something that we had to fix. And in the recent past, then we developed the idea that we needed to have victim witness specialists to bridge that gap. And we did that over the course of the past few years. And then we were fortunate to be able to bring Selena and Dakota on, and they really have hit the ground running to help with that communication that the detectives aren't always able to give. Part of it is the fact that, you know, detectives are investigating, they're out there, they're doing follow-up, they're trying to solve the crimes, and they're not always available sitting at their desks when people call and want that communication. So oftentimes people perceive that nothing's being done when in fact it is being done. So we're filling a gap, and Selena and Dakota are really just treasures to our department at this point.
Mm. Some of these victims, they are crime witnesses. What issues do your detectives face when trying to get information from victims?
So a big portion of that is trust, and it might be trust just in the community itself of the police, trust in the process that they're going to be cared for through the process. Being a witness to a crime isn't something that somebody wants to ever be, but oftentimes when people do witness crimes, we expect them to now enter the judicial process and be available to us through that process, through the court system.
Selena, how does this trauma, especially this outreach to family members, how does trauma affect people after witnessing a crime?
It can come out in a lot of different ways. Some people shut down. Some people are in a little bit of denial, and who could blame them? Something horrible has happened, and they're still really trying to wrap their head around what's gone on. And in some cases, or many cases, people have a lot of questions. I think that's something that we probably see most frequently, is people really want to know why. And unfortunately, that why isn't always readily available. And even if we did find a logical explanation for things, I don't think the why is ever fully answered for anybody. That kind of loss just can never be fixed.
Dakota, we heard the word trust. What do you do to try to build trust between the officers and these crime victims or witnesses?
I think one way to build trust is not to overpromise and to make sure that you do what you're going to say that you're going to do. So if I indicate to someone that I will follow up with them on such and such date for such and such reasons, then I will do that. If for some reason I don't have all of the information that I thought I would have at that time, I will still touch base with them because they are expecting that communication from me. And if I do not follow through on what I indicated to them, then I can't build that relationship and rapport.
We're talking with Milwaukee Police Department's two new victim witness specialists, Dakota Krenz and Selena Zanuzzi. Also with us is Captain James Hutchinson, commander of the department's homicide division. Selena, homicides can have major direct financial costs on victims' families, everything from the funeral arrangements, funeral home costs, lost wages, the loss of a family member's income. Victim compensation funds, they're supposed to give some of that relief. Can you, you know, beyond the emotional impact, how do you see the financial impact affecting these families?
The financial impact is very great. All of the things that you've mentioned are very true. They are challenges that families face immediately. And many of the people that come across, we come across in this work, are families who are already struggling sometimes. A lot of hardworking people, they may be losing the person who had the solid job or the insurance. We always try to connect families with crime victim compensation. We'll do home visits. We've gone out to hospitals for non-fatal shooting victims as well, to try to connect them with that resource. If there's anything in the community that we're aware of, we do utilize 211 regularly along with a lot of other community partners. But it has a significant impact on people financially, which again adds to that mental strain and just overall stress.
Dakota, what would you like to add there about these victims and their financial situation?
I think it can kind of unfortunately present a snowball, especially for non-fatal shooting victims where they have now experienced a gunshot wound or injury, and then that can affect their ability to be employed, which that can then affect their ability to afford housing or to afford food. And a lot of people are presented with those issues today as it is, but then to have that additional barrier and have to mentally overcome an injury and go through recovery on top of everything else is very difficult.
Captain Hutchinson, we've heard about resources really strongly here. How can police do a better job of sharing information with family members and victims and connecting them with resources?
In the past, detectives would perhaps hand a pamphlet and that would be the extent of it. But to have knowledgeable, reachable, and reliable people on the other end of the phone and oftentimes in person to help them through that process. Because as was mentioned earlier, when these events happen, people aren't thinking straight. They aren't ready to logically move through any kind of process at that point. And to have that person to help them along is something that has been lacking in the past. And we are really realizing that bridging of that gap with Selena and Dakota.
There was this 2024 report from the National Case Close Project recommending that your department hire victim witness specialists and use a more trauma-informed approach. Is it hard for investigators to relate with victims? What are the challenges?
I wouldn't say it's hard for investigators to relate. I think it's hard oftentimes for investigators to wear those multiple hats of trying to get to the facts and trying to get to the bottom of what happened while also delivering that trauma-informed care, like you said. Our detectives are great. Our detectives are compassionate. They're passionate. They are professionals, but it's oftentimes difficult to approach all those paths at the same time. And you mentioned case closed. That was definitely something that helped to open our eyes to the opportunities. We did take advantage of opportunities to go visit other departments, see what they're doing, and really learn from what they had done and bring it here to Milwaukee and start this program, which I think is just the dawning of the program and could easily be expanded.
Dawning of the program, what is this vision? Where do you see it headed?
I see it being that we have victim witness specialists available across the investigative arms of our department, perhaps even within our districts, and that we have them available on, you know, multiple shifts and off, you know, weekends, weekdays, just like we have detectives now. So at some point in the future, I'd like to see it really enhanced, and maybe steps towards that. But we are definitely seeing that trust being built in our community through this program right now.
Dakota, how hard is it to be an advocate for these families you're working with, but also maintaining boundaries to protect the integrity of that investigative work by the detectives?
I don't want to speak for Selena, but I think our experience at the district attorney's office really helped build a foundation in terms of being able to work with victims and their families and be able to set the appropriate boundaries and recognizing that, yes, this is a job for us, but also this is so much more than a job, and that we show up to work every single day because we do have a passion for the community and a passion for helping people through the most difficult times of their lives. So I think we've been able to do a good job in terms of and showing up for people in the best ways that we can every day, while also leaning on each other to make sure that we have the supports that we need.
Mm. Selena, how do you negotiate that fine line?
We've been a really good resource to each other. We have good community contacts. We've had great support within the department. I think the biggest piece of this, we both love the work we do. We both care tremendously about the community and the families that we're connected with. It is really so much more than just a job. It is a passion. And we want to make sure that we are trying to find every resource available to assist families in the best way that we can, because people do have to find a way to move forward. It's just going to be at their own pace. And we want to make sure that we're there in a supportive function every step of the way when we can.
Your job is to give and to give and to give in people's hardest moments. How do you take care of yourself, Selena?
I do find that I have a very good support network outside of work. I don't really talk about work outside of work. First of all, I will always want to be respectful of people and families that I'm working with. Our job also requires that we keep these things confidential. Mm. I think just having some outside hobbies that are a little more lighthearted can help. And also setting some time frames, certain hours of the day are just for me. Certain activities I will do just alone. And that helps me personally.
How about for you, Dakota? How do you care for yourself?
I would say some similar things as well in terms of having a good support group, both at work and outside of work. I do also have activities for myself. Selena and I are big dog moms. We love our dogs and we love our dog walks. I would also say that MPD has a peer mentorship program. So if you need peers, Selena, and you need those people for support, it is nice to have them to go to because of that confidentiality piece and in terms of not being able to discuss certain things outside of work, understandably so. So we have many tools and resources to utilize ourselves to make sure that we can be successful in our roles.
Captain Hutchinson, Selena, and Dakota, they've been on the job now for a few months. What effects are you seeing from their involvement in this casework?
Well, as you mentioned, it's just been a few months, so we're not going to see an overarching community effect at this point. But what we are receiving are many, many anecdotal report backs from people that have lost loved ones, that have been witnesses to crimes, that are the resources out there, and just the support that they're feeling, the understanding that they now have of the process, and saying just how much they really appreciate what the Milwaukee Police Department's doing. Oftentimes in the past, we would investigate crimes and do a whole lot of work. However, it didn't seem like we were doing much because we weren't talking back to the family and communicating back. Now they're seeing that work. Now they're aware that it's being done. Again, we're not telling them everything we're doing, but they know we care, we're there, and we're getting looking into what happened to their loved one. So it's pretty anecdotal at this point, but everything is trending in the right direction with the feedback that we've been getting.
Well, Captain Hutchinson, Selena, and Dakota, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yes,
thank
you.
Thanks for having
us. That was Dakota Krenz and Selena Zanuzzi, the Milwaukee Police Department's new victim witness specialists, and Captain James Hutchinson, commander of the department's homicide division. They talked about new efforts to help family members of homicide victims navigate police investigations and the criminal justice system.
Coming up, meet a beloved custodian in Cross Plains who retires today on the last day of school after 61 years of helping elementary school kids smile and realize they belong.
You can go into a building, you know, and you can pretty much sense what needs to be done. And it gives you a good feeling to do something that's best for the kids.
The custodian who goes by the name Mr. Peanuts, that's next on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. When Rodney Esser started working at Park Elementary School in Cross Plains, a carton of school milk cost about 3 cents. It was 1965, and the school building was still under construction.
Esser, better known as Mr. Peanuts, has been cleaning the hallways and classrooms and mentoring students ever since. Over his long career, he's worked with 7 different principals and about 15,000 students.
But he is more than a custodian. He often helps struggling students find their way, and each child is welcome to a high five and a hug as they walk the halls.
Mr. Peanuts is retiring on this last day of school. Events are planned to celebrate his decades of service and contributions to this village in Dane County.
To hear more about his legacy and influence on the Cross Plains community, we have Mr. Peanuts himself. Welcome to the program.
I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so glad to meet you wonderful people.
Where did Mr. Peanuts, the nickname, come from?
Well, I've been asked that quite often. Apparently, when I was born, I was just a little bit of a baby. I don't remember it, even though I was there. But the thing is that as they always say, which they do today yet, oh, he's just a little peanut.
Yeah.
And so that name stuck. Well, then when I started working for the school systems, they said, we better change that to Mr. Peanuts. So that's how Mr. Peanuts came about.
You started this job more than a half century ago. Times have changed a lot. How did you get into it?
That's very interesting. I'm glad you asked that question. When I came out of the service, we were farming the land. We didn't own it. We worked it on halves, on shares, with the president of the bank across Plains, Mr. Tubbs. Well, what I didn't know while I was going to the service, that he said to the school board, yes, you can buy the land under one condition. And the condition is what? That Mr. Peanuts goes with the land. So really, this is a job I never applied for. Mm. To this day, I've never applied for it. And so consequently, I'm just sticking it out and I'm enjoying every minute of it. That's why retirement to me, I don't look at it like a lot of people would. And I know I'm going to miss it. Mm. I know I'm going to miss it.
Such a heartwarming job.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You're so much more than a custodian. You're a mentor to these kids. They see you every day in the hallways and you develop these beautiful friendships. Can you talk a little bit about this experience of having a bond with these students and helping them through tough times?
Oh, yeah. Some of these issues that I have to deal with are a little bit over my head, you know, and I kind of figure out I do it my own way. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try and impress anybody by doing it. You know, my ways are not professional. Mm-hmm. Mine come from the heart. And if I can connect with the heart of a child and try to see the world through their eyes, that's what made the connection with the kids and I. Mm. And also with the staff and I.
Hi, students. How you doing, guys? You're here for an interview, huh? As we go around the corner, you may find that might be just a nice place to do the interview.
Does that sound good? You guys want to go talk over there? Is that all right?
Sure.
All right.
I'm Ellery Long, and I'm 7 years old. He's put his whole, life into Park School and his whole career. He's very nice, and we should all appreciate him for what he does. The Park School would never be the same without Mr. Peanuts, and I don't want him to leave.
Ethan Wobbs, and I am 10. So, when people think about it, he is the custodian, really, but he's also, the king of Park School, and he, owns it. And the fact that he shares it with everyone around him is just amazing. And I'm going to miss him when he is going to be leaving, and that will be sad.
I bet you see generations of families, and I notice that you call them my kids. I wonder, do you feel like they become a bit like children to you over the years?
I never thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah, my daughters went to school there, my grandchildren went to school there, and my kids. Mm-hmm. And I also refer to it, I've been told this, you refer to it as my school. And he says, you take a look at it, and it's evident because the curb appeal tells you what you can expect outside the school or inside the school, either way.
I understand that when it snows heavily, you're at school, you know, well before the time you normally would start, and that you've never taken a sick day. How do you stay so healthy and with so much energy?
That's God's plan. Yeah. I put some long days in and long hours in there, and I donate a lot of my time and things like that just because it's home to me. It's home to me, and it's my family.
And that's what keeps you going.
Yeah, it does. It does. And when we have a snow day, the kids are so excited about the snow day. When they come back, we've put the snow. And I have it put in certain places, well, for a number of reasons. The main reason is for drainage once it starts to thaw.
Sure.
But the other thing is, it's also for their entertainment. And these kids, they crawl up these big banks of snow, and they slide down it. They play King of the Hill. They push each other down. And to see kindergartners and up to fourth graders doing this, you go home at night smiling. You come back in the morning the same way.
And you've climbed many a ladder to get balls down from the roof, I understand.
Oh, you heard about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking with Mr. Peanuts, also goes by Rodney Esser, about his 61 years of service at Park Elementary School's head custodian in Cross Plains. That's a village in Dane County. You plan to volunteer at the school starting in October, so a little bitty break after retirement, small break, and then come back. What will you be doing? What's your vision?
Well, when I come back, I'll be working with special needs kids. And there's so many things that I see from my viewpoint that others don't see. And I'm working with the principal, and I'm also working with the educational coach. And we're going to come up with a plan. And then I'll start there on the 1st of October.
What are some things that you see in a child who is struggling that others... support systems around that child might not see?
Attitude. It doesn't take too long to figure out the kid's attitude and also what the kid is short of. Mm. And if he's short of some kind of love and wants to, that's, they're pretty quiet at first. Mm. But kind of figure out what they would like to do and be happy and proud of what they just did. So in my line of business, I use machines and things like that, and they're always impressed with the one that is the big floor scrubber, which we call a Zamboni.
I was going to say, you're a Zamboni, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they are so impressed on that, but yet they're afraid of it, you know? So once I get up in the cafeteria, which is every day, I make the rounds with them, and they kind of walk alongside and things like that. And finally, I see a different expression on their face that tells me, boy, I would like to try that. And so I ask them if they'd like to try it. And they says, yeah, they would. And I'll limit that to fourth graders.
Okay.
But anyway, they'll come along then, and finally walk with them. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a day-by-day thing because you make a wrong turn with that and we're in trouble.
Sure.
Yeah.
It also reminds me that the job of a custodian is varied and you have to be a problem solver, I would imagine, that there are so many things that come up that you have to figure out. Is that so? Is that right?
Oh, you couldn't be more right. Yeah, and not only... it's the behind-the-scene things that I end up doing that people don't even know I'm doing. Mm. And a lot of it has to do with the heating, venting, and air conditioning.
What's your name, ma'am?
Nicole Cartman.
Okay, and what do you do here?
I am a first-grade teacher at Park.
Oh, and how long have you worked with Mr. Peanuts?
Oh, Mr. Peanuts and I have worked together, I think, 17 years.
Wow.
He was here a few more before me. Just a few. Peanuts, I have a question. Who sends you the most texts that they're hot or cold all day long?
Nicole Cartman, room 145.
I am going to have to learn to adjust better to temperature change because Peanuts is so good about putting it up a degree or taking it down a degree. And sometimes it's multiple times in a day. I think the biggest interactions when we come for lunch every day, the kindergartners are up here every single day already getting ready to go out for recess. And Peanuts has so much to do, like, in the cafeteria to get ready for the next group to come in, but he's always stopping and helping little ones zip their jackets, get their gloves on, do their hats. Like, every single day, he's doing that. And he's probably happy that it's warmer now and he doesn't have to do that.
The little tiny zippers.
I know, but you do it.
We get it done.
He's working hard.
Preston Rodriguez and I teach third grade. So I remember when I came to interview at Park School and they were talking about somebody named Peanuts. I thought it was a joke. I thought it was maybe a dog or something. And then it turned out to be a real person, a grown man. And he was just super friendly right away. He's friendly with everybody, even if he doesn't know you yet. And you feel like you're his friend as soon as you do. But since then, yeah, the polka parties, the recognitions, National Custodian of the Year. It's just been all those wonderful things to remember by, but it's really the day-to-day stuff. The hello, how you doing, Preston? And, you know, my family is from Michigan, and my dad always asks, how's Mr. Peanuts doing? How is he? And it's just, yeah, the day-to-day stuff is really what matters the most.
You are 86 years old. Do you have a piece of advice for anyone who is nearing retirement and nearing this change in life?
Yeah, as long as you stay active, as long as you like what you do, and as long as you, there's lots of things that you wish you didn't have to do, but those are things that you learn from. And you can go into a building, you know, and you can pretty much sense what needs to be done with the kids and, you know, what's best for the kids. And it gives you a good feeling to do something that's best for the kids. I couldn't ask for it any better. I don't know what it's like in any other places because I've never worked with kids in any other places. But to have my own school family, that's so heartwarming to walk in there. And you don't even let the door close behind you, and people are coming up to you, and they're hugging you, and they're just sharing their love for being there.
That's where your heart is, and that's where your home is.
And what I do is when my gym teacher, I stop in there quite often, and he's got the kids ready, and he's talking with them and everything. And he'll welcome me in there, and he'll say, "You got anything for the kids today, Mr. Peanuts?" I says, "I do." I says, "Have they worked hard today and this week so far?" And the kid says, "Yes, we have." Well, if it's going to be a Friday or a Monday off, I'll start this like about 2 days before that. I says, "If you work hard tomorrow, I'm going to give you 3 days off." Well, the kids get so excited about that. And at kindergarten and first grade, they don't understand that.
They haven't looked at the school calendar.
No, but the fourth graders got me figured out. You know?
I bet.
So, yeah, that's it. But we have fun. We have fun doing it.
Yeah. You make smiles.
It will, and not only that, but it has a ripple effect that if, let's say, don't respect the cleanliness and the sanitation in the building, the teachers say, "Now, who do you suppose has to clean that up if you don't?" And then right away, they'll say, "Mr. Peanuts, well, you think he wants to do that?" "No. I mean, my building's pretty
immaculate."
Easy. Yeah. Yeah.
What is it going to be like to put the mop bucket away for the last time, or to put the floor buffing machine away for the last time and be able to walk out of the school?
That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. You know what? I don't have a visual or even a feel for that. And that's why I volunteered to come back. So someday I'll have to face that. You're absolutely right. But for the most part, knowing that I have a place to come back to after I do my ranching and things like that, and still work with kids, but at a totally different level. I won't be working at a level that requires maintenance and things like that. I'll be working with a level that's more to make the kids happy, to see what they see through their eyes. I'm looking for that.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. Mr. Peanuts, thank you for joining us.
This has been such a great pleasure. I've so looked forward to coming in here and being a part of this here.
Rodney Esser, better known as Mr. Peanuts, is a custodian at Park Elementary School in Cross Plains, retiring after 61 years of service. Producer Mackenzie Crummy went to Park Elementary earlier this spring to talk with students and staff about what Mr. Peanuts has meant to the school community.
We just met a school custodian who's played a big role for students and staff for decades.
And we want to hear from you. Was there someone in your school experience who made a positive impact on your life? Maybe it was a teacher or the principal, other staff members, support staff, a coach maybe.
Whether you're in the class of 2026 or remembering someone a little further back, give a shout out.
Email us at wisconsintoday@wpr.org, or you can call or text to get in touch. That number is 888-642-0232. Once again, that's 888-642-0232.
Wisconsin Today producers include Trevor Hook, Joe Tarr, and Mackenzie Crummy.
Our technical directors are Tyler Ditter and Brad Kohlberg.
Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.